Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Walt Disney presents Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, a story by A.A. Milne, read by Michelle Dragony. Once upon a time, a very long time ago, about last Friday, Winnie the Pooh lived in a forest all by himself under the name of Sanders. That means that he had the name over the door in gold letters and lived under it. One day, when he was out walking, he came to an open place in the middle of the forest, and in the middle of this place was a large oak tree, and from the top of the tree there came a loud buzzing noise. Winnie the Pooh sat down at the foot of the tree, put his head between his paws, and began to think. First of all, he said to himself, "That buzzing noise means something. You don't get a buzzing noise like that, just buzzing and buzzing without it meaning something. If there's a buzzing noise, somebody's making a buzzing noise. And the only reason for making a buzzing noise that I know of is because you're a bee." Then he thought another long time and said, "And the only reason for being a bee that I know of is to make honey." And then he got up and said, "And the only reason for making honey is so I can eat it." So he began to climb the tree. He climbed and he climbed and he climbed, and as he climbed, he sang a little song to himself. It went like this.
"Isn't it funny how a bear likes honey? Buzz, 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 I wonder why he does."
Then he climbed a little further and a little further, and then just a little further. By that time, he had thought of another song.
"It's a very funny thought that if bears were bees, they'd build their nests at the bottom of trees. And that being so, if the bees were bears, we shouldn't have to climb up all these stairs."
He was getting rather tired by this time, so that is why he sang a complaining song. He was nearly there now, and if he just stood on that branch, crack!
"Oh, help,"
said Pooh, as he dropped 10 feet on the branch below him.
"If only I hadn't, if only I hadn't,"
he said as he bounced 20 feet onto the next branch.
"You see, what I meant to do,"
he explained as he turned head over heels and crashed onto another branch 30 feet below.
"What I meant to do, of course it was rather,"
he admitted as he slithered very quickly through the next 6 branches.
"It all comes, I suppose,"
he decided as he said goodbye to the last branch, spun around 3 times, and flew gracefully into a gorse bush.
"It all comes of liking honey so much. Oh, help."
He crawled out of the gorse bush, brushed the prickles from his nose, and began to think again. And the first person he thought of was Christopher Robin. So Winnie the Pooh went round to his friend Christopher Robin, who lived behind a green door in another part of the forest.
"Good morning, Christopher Robin," he said.
"Good morning, Winnie the Pooh," said Christopher Robin.
"I wonder if you've got such a thing as a balloon about you."
"A balloon?"
"Yes. I just said to myself, coming along, I wonder if Christopher Robin has such a thing as a balloon about him. I just said it to myself, thinking of balloons and wondering."
"What do you want a balloon for?"
said Christopher Robin. Winnie the Pooh looked around to see that nobody was listening, put his paw to his mouth, and in a deep whisper, "Honey." "But you don't get honey with balloons, Pooh."
"I do," said Pooh.
"Well, it just happened that Christopher Robin had been to a party the day before at the house of his friend Piglet, and they had balloons at the party. Christopher Robin had a big green balloon, and one of Rabbit's relations had had a big blue one and had left it behind, really, being too young to go to a party at all. And so Christopher Robin had brought the green one and the blue one home with him. "Which would you like?" he asked Pooh. Pooh put his head between his paws and thought very carefully. "It's like this," he said. "When you go after honey with a balloon, the great thing is not to let the bees know you're coming. Now, if you have a green balloon, they might think you are only part of the tree and not notice you. And if you have a blue balloon, they might think you are only part of the sky and not notice you. And the question is, which is more likely?"
"Wouldn't they notice you underneath the balloon?" asked Christopher Robin.
"Well, they might or they might not," said Winnie the Pooh. "You never can tell with bees."
He thought for a moment and said, "I shall try to look like a small black cloud. That will deceive them."
"Then you had better have the blue balloon," said Christopher Robin, and so it was decided. Well, they both went out with the blue balloon, and Christopher Robin took his gun with him, just in case, as he always did, and Winnie the Pooh went to a very muddy place that he knew of and rolled until he was black all over, and then, when the balloon was blown up as big, and Christopher Robin and Pooh were both holding on to the string, Christopher Robin let go suddenly, and Pooh Bear floated gracefully up into the sky and stayed there, level with the top of the tree, and about 20 feet away from it.
"Hooray!" shouted Christopher Robin.
"Isn't that fine?" shouted Winnie the Pooh down to him. "What do I look like?"
"You look like a bear holding on to a balloon," said Christopher Robin.
"Not," said Pooh anxiously, "not like a small black cloud in a blue sky?"
"Not very much."
"Ah, well, perhaps from up here it looks different. And as I say, you never can tell with bees."
There was no wind to blow him nearer to the tree, so there he stayed. He could see the honey. He could smell the honey. But he couldn't quite reach the honey. After a little while, he called down.
"Christopher Robin," he said in a loud whisper.
"Hello."
"I think the bees suspect something."
"What sort of thing?"
"I don't know. But something tells me that they're suspicious."
"Perhaps they think that you're after their honey."
"It may be that. You never can tell with bees."
Then there was a little silence, and he called down again.
"Christopher Robin."
"Yes?"
"Have you an umbrella in your house?"
"I think so."
"I wish you could bring it out here and walk up and down with it and look up at me every now and then and say, 'Tut, tut, it looks like rain.' I think if you did that, it would help the deception which we are practicing on these bees."
Well, Christopher Robin laughed to himself, silly old bear, but he didn't say it aloud because he was so fond of Pooh. And he went home for his umbrella.
"Oh, there you are," called down Winnie the Pooh as soon as Christopher Robin got back to the tree.
I was beginning to get anxious. I have discovered that the bees are definitely suspicious. Shall I put my umbrella up? Said Christopher Robin. Yes, but wait a moment. We must be practical. The important bee to deceive is the queen bee. Can you see which is the queen bee from down there?
No.
Ah, a pity. Well, now, if you walk up and down with the umbrella singing, tut, tut, it looks like rain, I shall do what I can do by singing a little cloud song, such as a cloud song might sing. Go.
So while Christopher Robin walked up and down and wondered if it would rain, Winnie the Pooh sang this song.
How sweet to be a cloud, floating in the blue. Every little cloud always sings aloud. How sweet to be a cloud, floating in the blue. It makes them very proud to be a cloud.
The bees were still buzzing as suspiciously as ever. Some of them, indeed, left their nest and flew all around the cloud as it began the second verse of this song. And one bee sat down on the nose of the cloud for a moment and then got up again.
Christopher Robin, ow!
Called out the cloud.
Yes?
I've been thinking, and I have come to a very important decision. These are the wrong sort of bees.
Are they?
Quite the wrong sort. So I should think they would make the wrong sort of honey, shouldn't you?
Would they?
Yes. So I think I shall come down now.
How? Said Christopher Robin. Winnie the Pooh hadn't thought about this. If he let go of the string, he would fall bump, and he didn't like the idea of that. So he thought for a long time, and then he said,
Christopher Robin, you must shoot the balloon with your gun. You have got your gun.
Of course I have, said Christopher Robin. But if I do that, it will spoil the balloon.
But if you don't, said Pooh, I shall have to let go, and that would spoil me.
When he said it like this, Christopher Robin saw how it was, and he aimed very carefully at the balloon and fired.
Ow! Said Pooh.
Did I miss? Asked Christopher Robin.
You didn't exactly miss, said Pooh, but you missed the balloon.
I'm so sorry, said Christopher Robin, and he fired again, and this time he hit the balloon, and the air came slowly out, and Winnie the Pooh floated down to the ground.
But his arms were so stiff from holding on to the string of the balloon all that time that they stayed up straight in the air for more than a week. And whenever a fly came in and settled on his nose, he had to blow it off. Pooh! And I think, but I'm not sure, that that is why he was always called Pooh. The end. As a note, the name Winnie the Pooh actually came from the son of A.A. Milne, whose name was Christopher Robin. Christopher Robin named his teddy bear Winnie the Pooh. Winnie came from the name of a black bear at the London Zoo, and Pooh came from a swan that Christopher met when he was on holiday.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Vamanos, let's go, was read in English and Spanish by Roseanne Hitchcock. Thanks, Roseanne.
Vamanos, let's go, an adaptation of The Wheels on the Bus in English and Spanish by René Collato Lainez, illustrated by Joe Cepeda, published by Holiday House, New York, 2015. The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, Round and round, the wheels on the bus go round and round, all through the town. Las ruedas del autobús ruedan y ruedan, ruedan y ruedan, ruedan y ruedan. Las ruedas del autobús ruedan y ruedan por toda la ciudad. The engine on the train goes choo-choo-choo, choo-choo-choo, choo-choo-choo. The engine on the train goes choo-choo-choo all through the town. Locomotora del tren hace choo-choo-choo, choo-choo-choo, choo-choo-choo. La locomotora del tren hace choo-choo-choo por toda la ciudad. The horn on the truck goes honk, 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 honk. The horn on the truck goes honk, honk, honk all through the town. La bocina del camión hace toot, 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 toot. La bocina del camión hace toot, toot, toot por toda la ciudad. The motor on the motorcycle goes vroom, 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 vroom. The motor on the motorcycle goes vroom, vroom, vroom all through the town. El motor de la motocicleta hace vroom, 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 vroom. El motor de la motocicleta hace vroom, vroom, vroom por toda la ciudad. The siren on the ambulance goes ni na ni, ni na ni, ni na ni. The siren on the ambulance goes ni na ni all through the town. La sirena de la ambulancia hace au ni niu, au niu niu, au niu niu. La sirena de la ambulancia hace au niu niu por toda la ciudad. The alarm of the fire truck goes woo woo woo, woo woo woo, woo woo woo. The alarm of the fire truck goes woo 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 all through the town. La alarma del camión de bomberos hace wah wah wah, wah wah wah, wah wah wah. La alarma del camión de bomberos hace wah 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 por toda la ciudad. The horn on the tricycle goes toot, 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 toot. The horn on the tricycle goes toot, toot, toot all through the town. La bocina del triciclo hace toot, 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 toot. La bocina del triciclo hace toot, toot, toot por toda la ciudad. The airplane in the sky goes zoom, 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 zoom. The airplane in the sky goes zoom, zoom, zoom all through the town. El avión en el cielo hace fum, fui, fui, fum, fui, fui, fum, fui, fui. El avión en el cielo hace fum, fui, fui por toda la ciudad. The wheels on the bus go round and round. The engine on the train goes choo-choo-choo. The horn on the truck goes honk-honk-honk. The motor on the motorcycle goes vroom-vroom-vroom. The siren on the ambulance goes nee-na-nee. The alarm on the fire truck goes woo-woo-woo. The horn on the tricycle goes toot-toot-toot. The airplane in the sky goes zoom, zoom, zoom all through the park. Las ruedas del autobús ruedan y ruedan. La locomotora del tren hace chucu, chucu, chu. La bocina del camión hace tut, 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 tut. El motor de la motocicleta hace brum, brum, brum. La sirena de la ambulancia hace au, ñi, ñi. La alarma del camión de bomberos hace wah, wah, wah. La bocina del triciclo hace tut, tut, tut. El avión en el cielo hace fum, fui, fui por todo el parque. The end. El final.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
The Charge of the Light Brigade was written by Lord Tennyson in 1854, after the Battle of Balaclava in the Crimean War.
My name is Elizabeth Evans, and I am reading today The Charge of the Light Brigade by Alfred Lord Tennyson. It's a poem that commemorated what is thought to be one of the most useless battles of the Crimean War. It's not for everyone and contains quite a bit of information. It can be pretty gory. My father used to read this to me. He was Earl Nyer, and he was a combat pilot in World War II who flew the English Channel and spent a great deal of time in Britain, and loved Lord Tennyson, but also loved this poem because to him it signified a lot about what it meant to be a warrior in battle and what it meant to be in a war taking orders that were sometimes wrong. So, here we go with Charge of the Light Brigade. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward, all in the Valley of Death, rode the 600. Forward, the Light Brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the Valley of Death rode the 600. Forward, the Light Brigade! Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply. Theirs not to reason why. Theirs but to do and die. Into the Valley of Death rode the 600. Cannon to the right of them. Cannon to the left of them. Cannon in front of them. Volleyed and thundered. Stormed at with shot and shell. Boldly they rode and well. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabring the gunners there, charging an army while all the world wondered. Plunged in the battery smoke, right through the line they broke. Cossack and Russian reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered. Stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell. They that had fought so well came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made! All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made. Honor the Light Brigade, noble 600.
The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Wiggle Butts and Up Faces is written and read by Irene Colbison, owner of La Petite Baleine Swim Schools.
Wiggle Butts and Up Faces, a child's primer for beginning swimming. Hearts and hugs to Hans, Liesel, Anya, and Eric. Guess what, asked Mom one spring evening. Ingrid Good, 4 years old, was sitting in her chair at dinner. Her brother Alex, who liked to say he was almost three, was just walking in and asked back, what? I can't guess. Oh, Alex, said Ingrid, you always say that. You are supposed to try and guess. I heard the phone ring tonight, and Mommy was talking to Uncle Stephen. It's about Uncle Stephen's cabin, isn't it, Mommy? Alex muttered. I was going to say that as he started to eat. Mom smiled a merry smile and ruffled Alex's uncombed hair. Yes, it is about Uncle Stephen's cabin in the mountains. We've been invited to use the house for one whole month this summer. There's a swimming pool and a lake, It's time you both started swim lessons again. It's been much too long. Alex stopped eating when he heard Mommy say swim lessons. Suddenly, this surprise was not so great. Mommy continued, Mrs. Driscoll down the street has her baby swimming. She says the baby is getting lots of exercise and beginning to make friends with the teachers. Best of all, Mom winks at Father, little Jill takes such good naps on swim days. Daddy smiled back. I'll call tomorrow morning, she said to Daddy. Right now it's bath time, announced Daddy. Ingrid, you like the water. Why don't you practice blowing those bubbles under the water? Alex, let's shampoo your hair and get you used to the water around your face. We can begin our swim lessons right now. The next day, Mrs. Good picked up the children at nursery school. We are going to visit the swim school right now, she informed them. Ingrid cheered, but Alex was quiet. He wished he felt braver. Part of him really wanted to learn how to swim, but part of him just wanted to go home. As they walked through an office and into a pool room, Alex and Ingrid could feel how warm and wet the air was. This was an indoor pool, so they could swim in the winter, too. It smelled strange and sounds echoed a little. There, in the middle of the big room, was a giant blue pool of water. The Good family sat in chairs around the pool and watched their neighbor, baby Jill, playing with toys during her lesson. She was having a good time with her mommy. Alex noticed the teacher took the baby and swam with her underwater. Little Jill Driscoll held her breath and kicked her legs very hard. The teacher brought her back up and said, good girl. Baby Jill blinked her eyes and asked, back to mommy? Okay, said the swim teacher, but let's swim to her. In a few minutes, the baby's class was over. In the next class, the children were Alex and Ingrid's age. The boys and girls did some underwater dunks while holding their breaths and then kicked their feet, finishing with a little swim by themselves back to the pool stairs. Ingrid told her mom how excited she was to swim like the other children. Alex thought and thought about all he had seen. When they returned home, Alex went straight to his room. He decided to play swim teacher with his stuffed animals. He wanted to try these things alone in his room. Okay, little bear, hold your breath and jump to me, he called out. Now, bunny, it's your turn to pick up a ring in the water, Alex commanded. Beginning to enjoy this game, Alex lined up his swim students and said, watch me put my face down and kick to the stairs. It's easy if you say I think I can. Alex remembered the swim teacher said that a lot. He felt better about going to swim lessons already. He was going to practice again in the bathtub tonight. Ingrid and Alex, with their swimsuits and towels, started lessons the next week. Leah, their teacher, said Ingrid could use a kickboard to practice because she could already hold her breath underwater and blow bubbles. Leah held Alex and smiled at him. He tried to smile back. Let's count together and go underwater, okay, Alex? Asked Leah. Alex changed his mind. He did not want to get his face wet. He started to cry. Learning to swim is not easy for everyone, Alex, said Leah. But I'm here to help you, and we can't swim without being underwater. Let's do it together. Crying only makes you choke. It gets easier when we practice. Mommy, sitting on the deck, firmly reminded him about the pool rules. She would have to leave if he fussed. Alex really wanted her to stay. Although he was shaking, Alex listened to Leah. The first time he got his face wet, he almost did cry, because the water went down his throat and made him cough. Leah gave him a hug, and they tried again. This time he did it. Ingrid, Mommy, and Leah all clapped. Suddenly he felt so proud. He had learned to hold his breath underwater. Swimming was getting easier all the time. While Ingrid was learning how to put her breathing and kicking together, Alex practiced picking up rings at the stairs. He was doing it by himself. Sometimes he forgot and swallowed the water, but he didn't cry anymore. Soon, the lesson was over. Later during dinner, Daddy said, I'm so happy for both of you. And Ingrid said, if I learn how to breathe with my dog paddle, I will earn a ribbon. Leah calls us up faces to remind me to come up, spout, get a breath, and then go back down. Alex wanted a ribbon too, but that all sounded like a lot of work to him. He just wanted to swim without feeling scared, and now he could. Many weeks later, Alex also earned a ribbon for doing up faces. By this time, he had decided this was just a lot of fun. Ingrid was learning how to do a different kind of swimming. She was practicing floating while doing big arms, which is how her parents swam. But the most fun was learning wiggle butts, a silly name for dolphin kicks. Leah asked Ingrid to pretend to be a mermaid. Ingrid liked being a mermaid, and Alex, now that he could do up faces, wanted to learn wiggle butts too. Leah reminded the children about some safety rules for their vacation. This is what she wrote. 1. Ask permission to go swimming. 2. Never swim by yourself. Someone should watch you. 3. Do not swim to save a person that is in trouble in the water. Call for help first and throw something that floats to them if possible. 4. Good swimmers always use life vests in boats and rafts. Thank you, Leah, said Alex and Ingrid together. We are excited about our swimming vacation this summer, added Ingrid. And we'll be back to learn more swimming, promised Alex with a big smile. We like to swim. The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
What is it like to be a kid with cystic fibrosis? Who I Am is a children's story about CF. Brought to you by Genentech, originally in 2012. Read by Michelle Dragony. Hi, my name is Patty. For my second grade Who I Am report, I'm going to tell you what a day is like for me. So what is it like to be me? It's pretty fun, actually. I'm just like every other kid, but when I was born, a test showed that I had cystic fibrosis, or CF for short. Having CF means my lungs build up with sticky mucus that can attract germs and make me sick. CF can also make it harder for my body to digest food. Cystic fibrosis isn't something you catch. You're born with it, like having brown hair or blue eyes. It's just part of who I am. Every day, I need to do my breathing treatments. Sometimes it can be hard, especially when I just want to go outside and play, but I know they're good for me. Plus, it means I get to watch cartoons. Whenever I eat, I take pills called enzymes. These enzymes help my body turn food into energy. I need to eat a lot to keep me strong. My mom makes the best stuff for breakfast, like chocolate chip pancakes. After breakfast, I ride the bus to school with my best friend, Paul. He lives just across the street from me. Paul and I skateboard together almost every day after school. When we're not skateboarding, we usually hang out in my treehouse and play pirate with my tortoise, Humphrey. Sometimes my mom brings up special snacks like treetop trail mix or secret treasure smoothies. We go to the skate park, too. Paul stays away from flip tricks, but not me. I stay away from sniffly kids because I don't want to get sick. After the park, Paul sometimes comes over. We always wash our hands to get rid of germs. Then we do our homework. We always do math first. I love math. Just like with breakfast, before dinner, I take my enzymes. I need to eat a lot to keep me strong, and I love my mom's cooking. Just ask Paul. Sometimes Paul joins us for dinner. Our all-time favorite is my mom's mile-high lasagna. Our favorite dessert? Her super-duper sundae, of course. After dinner, Paul and I clear the table and feed Humphrey. Humphrey likes lasagna. I think that's funny. Then we play a fun game until it's time for me to take my medicines. When I do my breathing treatments, we all hang out until Paul has to go home. Sometimes my dad likes to pretend he's a mad scientist. He's pretty silly. Before bed, I brush my teeth and take a bath.
I love bubbles. Plus, the warm water feels so good. When I go to bed, my mom, dad, and I take turns reading. I especially like adventure stories. Sometimes we act them out with my stuffed animals. After a big hug and a kiss, I plunk down on my pillow and go to sleep. And that's the end of my day and the story of who I am. Thanks for listening.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Scaredy Mouse by Alan MacDonald, illustrated by Tim Warnes. First published in the United States by Tiger Tales in 2002. In a small hole behind a closet under the stairs, there lived a large family of mice. The youngest was called Squeak. Squeak was a small mouse, a scared mouse, a stay-at-home mouse. One evening, Squeak was woken up by his sister, Nibbles. "Let's go to the kitchen," she said. "I've just seen something yummy. A chocolate cake as big as a wheel." Squeak loved chocolate, but he was very scared. "What if I get lost?" he worried. "What if we meet the big ginger cat with green eyes?" "The ginger cat's asleep," said Nibbles, "and I know how to keep you from getting lost." Nibbles found a big ball of string and tied one end around Squeak. "There," she said. "All you have to do is follow the string and you'll find your way home." They scurried out of the mouse hole and into the dark, shadowy hall. Squeak kept close to Nibbles, trailing the string behind him. But as they crossed the hall, Squeak saw a long, stripy tail.
"It's the cat! It's the cat!" he cried.
Squeak ran this way and that, willy-nilly round and back. "Don't be silly," said Nibbles. "It's only a scarf." Squeak slowly came out of his hiding place. Nibbles and Squeak scampered to the dining room, under the table and under the chairs. But just as Squeak was about to eat a cookie crumb, he saw two eyes gleaming in the dark.
"It's the cat! It's the cat!" he cried.
Squeak ran his way in that, willy-nilly round and back. "Don't be silly," said Nibbles. "It's only a toy." Squeak smiled nervously. They crept into the den, past the fireplace, and past the ticking clock. Suddenly, Squeak froze in his tracks. There, peeping above the edge of the armchair, was a head with two sharp ears.
"It's the cat! It's the cat!" he cried.
Squeak ran this way and that, willy-nilly round and back. "Don't be silly," said Nibbles. "It's only a pillow."
"Silly me," said Squeak.
Two mice tiptoed into the kitchen, across the floorboards and past the cupboard. Squeak peeped inside. He shivered and shook. There in the shadows, something was furry.
"It's the cat! It's the cat!" he cried.
Squeak ran this way and that, willy-nilly round and back. "Don't be silly," said Nibbles. "It's only a feather duster."
"Phew," sighed Squeak.
Just then, Nibbles spotted the chocolate cake on top of the fridge. It did not take them long to find their way up to it. Soon their paws and whiskers were sticky with chocolate. "Yummy," said Nibbles. "I could eat this all day." Squeak was a hungry mouse, but also a worried mouse, a scared mouse, a want-to-go-home mouse. So Nibbles scrambled down the fridge, and Squeak and the cake followed. They heaved the cake across the floor, but just as they reached the door, a shadow fell across their path.
"It's the cat! It's the cat!"
cried Squeak. "Don't be silly," said Nibbles. "It's only..."
"The cat! Run, Squeak! Eek!"
Squeak ran this way and that, willy-nilly round and back. The big ginger cat narrowed his eyes, opened his claws, and pounced. But the cat found himself caught in a web of string. The more he struggled, the more he became tangled, until soon he was tied up like a fat ginger package. A mad cat, a sad cat, a feeling like a fool cat. Squeak was no longer a small mouse or a scared mouse. He was as bold as a lion mouse. And the next time he met the big ginger cat, he just said, "Boo!"
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
"'Twas the Night Before Christmas" by Clement Clark Moore. "'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard his exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
This bedtime story was read by Ms. Felicia Howell's 5th grade after-school technology club at Lead Elementary School in San Mateo. This was their first podcast ever. We recorded Poppleton by passing the book and the mic around a table in the library. It was a lot of fun.
Poppleton, Book 1, written by Cynthia Ryland, illustrated by Mark Teague, published by Scholastic Inc., 1997. Neighbors. Poppleton used to be a city pig. He did city things. He took taxis. He jogged in the park. He went to museums.
Then one day, Poppleton got tired of city life. He moved to a small house in a small town. Poppleton's small house was charming. It had a little sunroom where Poppleton took naps. It had lots and lots of shelves where Poppleton kept things. It had a little garden where Poppleton planted corn. And Cherry Sue was Poppleton's new neighbor.
Cherry Sue was very friendly. In the morning, she called out, "Yoo-hoo! Poppleton, would you like some oatmeal?" So Poppleton had oatmeal with Cherry Sue. In the afternoon, she called out, "Yoo-hoo! Poppleton, would you like toasted cheese?" So Poppleton had toasted cheese with Cherry Sue.
All night, she called out, "Yoo-hoo! Poppleton, would you like spaghetti?" So Poppleton had spaghetti with Cherry Sue. This went on day after day. At first, it was fun, but not for long.
Some mornings, Poppleton did not want oatmeal. He wanted to sleep. Some afternoons, Poppleton did not want toasted cheese. He wanted TV. Some nights, Poppleton did not want spaghetti. He wanted to practice playing his harmonica. But Cherry Sue kept calling him,
"Yoo-hoo!"
Poppleton. One day when he was watering his lawn, Poppleton couldn't take it anymore. When Cherry Sue stuck her head out the window and yelled, "Yoo-hoo!" Poppleton soaked her with the hose. "Poppleton," cried Cherry Sue, dripping.
Poppleton felt awful. He ran to get a towel for Cherry Sue. "I'm sorry, Cherry Sue," Poppleton said. "I just got sick of toasted cheese and spaghetti and oatmeal. Sometimes I like to be alone."
"You too," said Cherry Sue. "I kept inviting you over because I didn't know how to stop inviting you over," she said. "I thought I might hurt your feelings."
Then Poppleton soaked himself with the hose. They laughed and laughed. Poppleton and Cherry Sue were best friends from then on.
The library. Poppleton went to the library every Monday. Monday was always Poppleton's library day.
If Cherry Sue invited him to tea on Monday, Poppleton would say, "Sorry, library day." If there was a wonderful parade in town on Monday, Poppleton would say, "Too bad, library day." Poppleton took library day very seriously.
At the library, Poppleton always got a table all to himself. He spread out each of his things on the table, his eyeglasses, his tissues, his lip balm, his pocket watch, his bookmark. Then he began to read.
Poppleton liked adventure stories. He buried his head in an adventure book every Monday and left it there all day long.
Sometimes he needed a tissue for a sad part. Sometimes he needed lip balm for a dry part. Sometimes he needed his pocket watch for a slow part. But he loved his adventures.
At the end of the day, Poppleton finished the story. He thanked the librarian and packed up his things in his duffel. Then he slowly walked home, all dreamy, from so much adventure. Monday was Poppleton's favorite day of all.
The pill.
Poppleton's friend, Fillmore, was sick in bed. Poppleton brought Fillmore some chicken soup.
"First I had to take my pill," said Fillmore. "Where is it?" asked Poppleton. "Over there on the table," said Fillmore.
Poppleton brought Fillmore his pill. "I can't take it like that," said Fillmore. "You have to hide it." "Hide it?" asked Poppleton. "You have to hide it in my food," said Fillmore.
"I'll put it in the soup," said Poppleton. "No, it has to be something sweet," said Fillmore. "Sweet?" asked Poppleton. "Sweet and soft," said Fillmore. "Sweet and soft?" asked Poppleton. "Sweet and soft with raspberry filling."
"And chocolate on top," said Fillmore. "Chocolate on." "Fillmore, are you talking about Cherry Sue's heavenly cake?" Fillmore smiled. Poppleton went away. Soon he came back with Cherry Sue's heavenly cake. "Now I can hide your pill," said Poppleton.
"Don't tell me which piece of cake it's in," said Fillmore. Poppleton sliced the cake into 10 pieces. He hid Fillmore's pill in one of them. Fillmore had the first piece. "Yum," said Fillmore. "Did I take my pill?" Poppleton shook his head.
Fillmore had another piece. "Yum," said Fillmore. "Did I take it?" Poppleton shook his head. Fillmore ate piece after piece after piece. "Did I take it?" Poppleton kept shaking his head. Finally, there was only one piece of cake left. Thank goodness, Poppleton said.
Fillmore looked at the piece of cake. I can't eat that one, he said. It has a pill. Well, what can you eat? Shouted Poppleton. Something lemony, said Fillmore, with coconut. I feel sick, said Poppleton. Move over.
Poppleton and Fillmore were sick in bed for 3 days. They took lots of pills. It took 27 cakes to get them down.
Poppleton was read by Miss Howell.
Leilani.
True.
Riley. Michelle.
Issa Sue.
Bobby.
Osvaldo.
1, 2, 3.
The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Today's story is Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Written by Judith Vierst, illustrated by Ray Cruz. Published by Anthenium Books for Young Readers in 1972. And I'm Chris Devsich. I went to sleep with gum in my mouth, and now there's gum in my hair. And when I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on the skateboard, and by mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running, and I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At breakfast, Anthony found a Corvette Stingray car kit in his breakfast cereal box, and Nick found a junior undercover agent code ring in his breakfast cereal box. But in my breakfast cereal box, all I found was breakfast cereal. I think I'll move to Australia. In the carpool, Mrs. Gibson let Becky have a seat by the window. Audrey and Elliot got seats by the window too. I said I was being scrunched. I said I was being smushed. I said, if I don't get a seat by the window, I am going to be carsick. No one even answered. I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At school, Mrs. Dickens liked Paul's picture of the sailboat better than my picture of the invisible castle. At singing time, she said I sang too loud. At counting time, she said I left out 16. Who needs 16? I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I could tell because Paul said I wasn't his best friend anymore. He said that Philip Parker was his best friend and that Albert Moyo was his next best friend and that I was only his third best friend. I hope you sit on a tack, I said to Paul. I hope the next time you get a double-decker strawberry ice cream cone, the ice cream part falls off the cone part and lands in Australia. There were two cupcakes in Philip Parker's lunch bag, and Albert got a Hershey bar with almonds, and Paul's mother gave him a piece of jelly roll that had little coconut sprinkles on the top. Guess whose mother forgot to put in dessert? Everybody repeat after me that's listening. It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. That's what it was, because after school, my mom took us all to the dentist, and Dr. Fields found a cavity just in me. Come back next week, then I'll fix it, said Dr. Fields. Next week, I said, I'm going to Australia. On the way downstairs, the elevator door closed on my foot, and while we were waiting for my mom to go get the car, Anthony made me fall where it was muddy. And then when I started crying because of the mud, Nick said I was a crybaby. And while I was punching Nick for saying crybaby, my mom came back with the car and scolded me for being muddy and fighting back. I was having a, everybody help me again that's listening, terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I told everybody. No one even answered. So then we went to the shoe store to buy some sneakers. Anthony chose white ones with blue stripes. Nick chose red ones with white stripes. I chose blue ones with red stripes. But then the shoe man said, "We're all sold out." They made me buy plain old white ones, but they can't make me wear them. When we picked up my dad at his office, he said I couldn't play with his copying machine, but I forgot. He also said to watch out for the books on his desk, and I was careful as could be, except for my elbow. He also said, "Don't fool around with this phone," but I think I called Australia. My dad said, "Please don't pick him up anymore." It was a, repeat after me at home, terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. There were lima beans for dinner, and I hate limas. There was kissing on TV, and I hate kissing. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes. My marble went down the drain, and I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. I hate my railroad train pajamas. When I went to bed, Nick took back the pillow he said I could keep, and the Mickey Mouse nightlight burned out, and I bit my tongue. The cat wants to sleep with Anthony, not with me. It has been a, everybody help me, terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. My mom says some days are like that, even in Australia. The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
The Three Bears by Paul Galdone, copyrighted 1974, published by Clarion Books. Once upon a time, there were three bears who lived together in a house of their own in the woods. One of them was a little wee bear, one was a middle-sized bear, and the other was a great big bear. The little wee bear had a little wee bed. The middle-sized bear had a middle-sized bed. And the great big bear had a great big bed. One morning, the three bears made porridge for breakfast and poured it into their bowls, but it was too hot to eat, so they decided to go for a walk in the woods until it cooled. While the bears were walking, a little girl named Goldilocks came to their house. First she looked in the window, and then she peeped through the keyhole. Of course, there was nobody inside. Goldilocks turned the handle of the door. The door was not locked, because the three bears were trusting bears. They didn't know one any harm and never thought anyone would harm them. So Goldilocks opened the door and went right in. There was the porridge on the table. It smelled very, very good. Goldilocks didn't stop to think whose porridge it was. She went straight to it. First, she tasted the porridge of the great big bear, but it was too hot. Then she tasted the porridge of the middle-sized bear, but it was too cold. And then she tasted the porridge of the little wee bear. It was neither too hot nor too cold, but just right. Goldilocks liked it so much, she ate it all up. Then Goldilocks went into the parlor to see what else she could find. There were three chairs. First she sat down in the chair of the great big bear, but it was too hard. Then she sat down in the chair of the middle-sized bear, but it was too soft. Then she sat down in the chair of the little wee bear. It was neither too hard nor too soft, but just right. Goldilocks liked it so much, she rocked and rocked until the bottom of the chair fell out. Down she went, plump, onto the floor. Goldilocks went into the bedroom where the three bears slept. First she lay down upon the bed of the great big bear, but it was much too high in the head for her. Then she lay down on the bed of the middle-sized bear, but it was much too high at the foot for her. Then she lay down on the bed of the little wee bear. It was neither too high at the head nor too high at the foot, but just right. Goldilocks liked it so much that she covered herself up and fell asleep. By this time, the three bears thought their porridge would be cool enough, so they came home for breakfast. Goldilocks had left the spoon of the great big bear in his porridge bowl. He noticed it first thing.
"Someone's been eating my porridge," said the great big bear in his great big voice.
Goldilocks had left the spoon of the middle-sized bear in her porridge, too. "Someone's been eating my porridge," said the middle-sized bear in her middle-sized voice. And then the little wee bear looked at his bowl. "Someone's been tasting my porridge and has eaten it all up," cried the little wee bear in his little wee voice. The three bears went into the parlor. Goldilocks had left the cushion crooked in the chair of the great big bear. He noticed it first thing.
"Someone has been sitting in my chair," said the great big bear in his great big voice.
Goldilocks had squashed down the cushion of the middle-sized bear. "Someone's been sitting in my chair," said the middle-sized bear in her middle-sized voice. Then the little wee bear looked at his chair. "Someone's been sitting in my chair and has sat right through it," cried the little wee bear in his little wee voice. The three bears went into the bedroom. Goldilocks had pulled the pillow of the great big bear out of place. He noticed it first thing.
"Someone's been laying in my bed," said the great big bear in a great big voice.
Goldilocks had pulled the blanket of the middle-sized bear out of place. "Someone's been laying in my bed," said the middle-sized bear in her middle-sized voice. Then the little wee bear looked at his bed. "Someone's been laying in my bed, and here she is," cried the little wee bear in his little wee voice. This woke up Goldilocks at once, and there were three bears all staring at her. Goldilocks was so frightened, she tumbled out of bed and ran to the window. Out she jumped. Then she ran away as fast as she could, never looking behind her. No one knows what happened to Goldilocks after that. As for the three bears, they never saw her again. The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Hello, my name is Patty Sheeran, and today I'm going to read Harold and the Purple Crayon by Crockett Johnson, published by HarperCollins Publisher, copyright 1955. One evening, after thinking it over for some time, Harold decided to go for a walk in the moonlight. There wasn't any moon, and Harold needed a moon for a walk in the moonlight, and he needed something to walk on. He made a long, straight path so he wouldn't get lost, and he set off on his walk, taking his big purple crayon with him. But he didn't seem to be getting anywhere on the long, straight path. So he left the path for a shortcut across a field, and the moon went with him. The shortcut led right to where Harold thought a forest ought to be. He didn't want to get lost in the woods, so he made a very small forest with just one tree in it. It turned out to be an apple tree. The apples would be very tasty, Harold thought, when they got red. So he put a frightening dragon under the tree to guard the apples. It was a terribly frightening dragon. It even frightened Harold. He backed away. His hand holding the purple crayon shook. Suddenly he realized what was happening, but by then Harold was over his head in an ocean. He came up thinking fast. In no time, he was climbing aboard a trim little boat. He quickly set sail, and the moon sailed along with him. After he had sailed long enough, Harold made land without much trouble. He stepped ashore on the beach, wondering where he was. The sandy beach reminded Harold of picnics, and the thought of picnics made him hungry. So he laid out a nice, simple picnic lunch. There was nothing but pie, but there were all 9 kinds of pie that Harold liked best. When Harold finished his picnic, there was quite a lot left. He hated to see so much delicious pie go to waste. So Harold left a very hungry moose and a deserving porcupine to finish it up. And off he went, looking for a hill to climb to see where he was. Harold knew that the higher up he went, the farther he could see. So he decided to make a hill into a mountain. If he went high enough, he thought, he could see the window of his bedroom. He was tired and he felt he ought to be getting to bed. He hoped he could see his bedroom window from the top of the mountain. But as he looked down over the other side, he slipped, and there wasn't any other side of the mountain. He was falling in thin air. But luckily, he kept his wits and his purple crayon. He made a balloon and grabbed onto it. He made a basket under the balloon big enough to stand in. He had a fine view from the balloon, but he couldn't see his window. He couldn't even see his house. So he made a house with windows. And he landed the balloon on the grass in the front yard. None of the windows was his window. He tried to think where his window ought to be. He made some more windows. He made a big building full of windows. He made lots of buildings full of windows. He made a whole city full of windows. But none of the windows was his window. He couldn't think where it might be. He decided to ask a policeman. The policeman pointed the way Harold was going anyway, but Harold thanked him anyway. He walked along with the moon, wishing he was in his room in his bed. Then suddenly Harold remembered. He remembered where his bedroom window was when there was a moon. It was always right around the moon. And then Harold made his bed. He got in and he drew up the covers. The purple crayon dropped on the floor and Harold dropped off to sleep. The end.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.
Skippy John Jones by Judy Schachner. Published by Dutton's Children's Books in 2003. Every morning, Skippy John Jones woke up with the birds. And this did not please his mother at all. "Get yourself down here right now, Mr. Kitten Britches," ordered Mama Junebug Jones. "No self-respecting cat ever slept with a flock of birds," she scolded, "or ate worms, or flew, or did his laundry in Mrs. Doohickey's bird bath." The lecture went on and on as usual. "You've got to do some serious thinking before you leave this room, Mr. Fuzzy Pants," said his mother, "about just what it means to be a cat, not a bird, not a mouse, or a grouse, or a moose or a goose, not a rat or a bat. You need to think about just what it means to be a Siamese cat. And stay out of your closet," she added, closing the bedroom door. But once he was alone, Skippy John Jones began to bounce and bounce and bounce on his big boy bed. "Oh, I'm Skippy John Jones, and I bounce on my bed, and once or six times I land on my head." On his way down to earth from a gigantic big bounce, Skippy John Jones shot past his bedroom mirror. "Holy guacamole!" exclaimed Skippy John Jones. "What was that?" So up he went again, and again it appeared in the mirror. Then, using his very best Spanish accent, he said, "My ears are too big for my head. My head is too big for my body. I'm not a Siamese cat. I am a Chihuahua." Back on land, Skippy John Jones climbed into his toy box and rifled through some of his old junk. After he put on his mask and sword and climbed onto his mouse, Skippy John Jones began to sing in a muy, muy soft voice. "My name is Skippito Frisquito, clap, clap. I fear not a single bandito, clap, clap. My manners are mellow, I'm sweet like the jello. I get the job done, yes indeedo, clap, clap." Back in the kitchen, Jujubee, Jezebel, and Jillyboo Jones were helping Mama Junebug Jones make lunch. "Can Skippy John come out of his room now?" asked Jujubee. "No," answered Mama Junebug Jones. "Mr. Fluffernutter is still thinking." In fact, Skippy John wasn't thinking about being a Siamese cat at all. With a walk into his closet, his thoughts took him down a lonesome desert road far, far away in old Mexico. Not long into his journey, a misterioso band of chihuahuas appeared out of the dust.
"Ay, caramba, who goes there?" asked Skippy John Jones.
"We go by the name of Los Chimichangos," growled Don Diego, the biggest of the small ones. "Who are you?"
"I am El Skipito, the great sword fighter," said Skippy John Jones.
Then the smallest of the small ones spoke up.
"Why, the mosquito, dude?"
asked Poquito Tito.
"I go incognito," said Skipito.
"Do you like rice and beans?" asked Pintolito.
"Si, I love mice and beans," said Skipito.
"He might be the dog of our dreams," whispered Rosalita.
"Perhaps," said Tia Mia, "if he knows the secret password." Leaning toward Don Diego, El Skipito half sneezed, half spoke the secret password into the Chihuahua's very large ear.
"Ah-choo-pee-choo!"
"Bless you," said Don Diego.
"Gracias," said Skipito.
"Then it is true," decreed Don Diego.
"Yep, yippee-yippee-do. It's the end of Alfredo Bezito. Skipito is here. We've nothing to fear. Adios to the Bambambolito."
Then all the chimichangos went crazy loco. First, they had a fiesta. Then they took a siesta. But after waking up, the chimichangos got down to serious business. Using his paw, Don Diego drew a picture in the sand of the great Bambolito for Skipito to see. A great hush grew over the chimichangos, so great that one could hear a whisker drop.
"Alfredo Bazito," whispered the crowd. "El blimpo Bambolito bandito."
"Si," said Poquito Tito. "The bandito steals our frijoles."
"Not your beans," cried Skipito, outraged.
"Si," Poquito continued.
"Red beans, black beans, Boston baked and blue, cocoa, coffee, kidney beans, pinto and jelly too. And now he comes for us," Poquito added.
"Por qué?" asked Skipito.
"Because we are full of the beans, too."
Then Don Diego stood tall and in his most somber voice declared,
"Yo quiero frijoles."
"Huh?" asked Skipito.
"The dude just wants his beans back," said Poquito Tito. "And you are the dog for the job."
"Me?"
asked Skipito.
Then all of the chimichangos turned toward Skipito, the great sword fighter. But poor Skipito had no time for a plan, because in the blink of an eye, a gigantic shadow darkened the landscape. The chimichangos scattered in all directions.
"Vamos, Skipito! Or it is you, the bandito, will eat-o!"
they cried. Skipito stood his ground, but his legs shimmied and shook like the jello, and his teeth chattered like the castanets. Then, in a muy, muy soft voice, he said,
"My name is Skipito Frisquito. Fear not a single bandito."
But Alfred Bazito flew straight for Skipito, until the bean-eating bandito hovered only inches away from the great sword fighter's face.
"Holy frijoles!" cried Skipito,
as he thrust his sword in the air. Suddenly, pop, went the bandito, landing on Skipito's sword. And quicker than one could say, "Chihuahua cheese and crackers," every kind of bean came spilling out of Alfredo Bazito, the Bambolito bandito.
Yip, yippy, yippito. Our hero is El Scapito. He's the dog of our dreams who delivered the beans, and now we can make our burritos.
But back at home, there was such a ruckus coming from Skippy John's room that Mama Junebug Jones and the girls just had to find out what was going on. They raced down the hall to the kitty boy's room. Bangito, Crashito, Papito, Skippito. Just in time to see Skippy John's closet exploding. Then out flew Candy, beanbag doggies, and the kitty boy with his birthday pinata on his head. Skippy John Jones, everyone cried. Hola, muchachitas, he said in a muy, muy soft voice. Mama Junebug Jones lifted up Skippy John and covered his head with furry, purry kisses. What am I going to do with you, Mr. Cocoa Pugs? She scolded. That night, when he was supposed to be going to sleep, Skippy John began to bounce and bounce on his big boy bed. Oh, I'm Skippy John Jones with a mind of my own, and I'll bounce on my bed for hours. I know that I'm a cat, but forget about that. Say goodnight, Skippy John Jones, called his mother. Buenas noches, mis amigos, said Skippy John Jones. The end. Skippy John Jones was read and sung a little bit by Michelle Dragony.
Bedtime Stories is recorded and produced in the Coastside Buzz Studios by Michelle Dragony.